This is Archer of ArcherRadio.com. Today is Tuesday, August 15th, 2006. And my co-host today is Chef Mark. Say hello, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
How are you?
I'm okay, except that you just blamed me for having all the audio problems when it wasn't me at all.
Well, yes, it was you. It was totally you.
Okay, Archer thinks that it's my fault that we had audio problems because he heard this echo when we were talking, but I don't know. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
But then what happened? You turned off something and the echo is gone. Right?
Okay, whatever. I just don't like being blamed for other people's problems.
Well, whatever. Can you hear me?
I had enough of that, and then now I have an ex.
Oh. Oh, okay, I got it. Can you hear me okay now, though?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay, good.
We're fine.
Good, good, good. Well, I wanted to tell the listeners that this was not going to be a complete Big Brother episode. We can talk a little bit about it, but...
An extravaganza.
Yeah, because I know that we've been talking a lot about Big Brother lately, but there are some things that we can talk about with Big Brother. I won't give anything away.
You better not.
I won't. No spoilers, because today's Tuesday, and the show was on Sunday, so they should have watched it by now. But you saw on Sunday that they had to redo the head of household competition, and it wasn't Erica who won, actually. It ended up being Janelle again. What did you think about that?
Ugh, I hate her, okay? I just so dislike that woman. How annoying. But it's just one of those great television moments, you know, to have the bitch keep winning.
I know, it's like Big Brother history happened because they had to redo head of household. All because Howie's buzzer wasn't working.
And the thing is, it's not like she's really the great player, but she really is just a really lucky player. Like, I don't know what it is. She's got really great luck.
Completely. I think the whole thing with the buzzer thing, she just totally lucked out and was able to answer the question correctly the next time.
Yeah, because here's the thing. She isn't playing smart, you know? Like, she's made so many tactical errors and just lucked out every time. Either because she was backed up by her alliance, or just, like we said, out of sheer luck.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then she nominated Danielle and Erica for eviction.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. But now what the listeners don't know is that I have been watching the feed, the Big Brother feed, and
you're just dying to give stuff away, aren't
I'm
you?
Not going to tell
you're gonna
you.
You're going to slip in a spoiler, even though you just said you weren't.
No, I'm not. I'm just, all I'm going to say is that I know who won the veto competition and what happened because of it. That's all I'm going to say.
You know what used to drive me crazy? When they first introduced that whole power of veto thing, it drove me crazy that everyone called it veto.
Why?
Like, instead of veto, like with a hard t sound,
oh.
They said veto, like it was V-I-D-O. Or something. Like it was. Every time I heard that, it made me think of like some Italian dude from the Bronx.
My Uncle Vito.
Yeah. My Uncle Vito. The power of veto. Like, you're walking around going, yo!
I never thought of it that way. But, you know, I watched probably an hour of the live feed today, and I'm telling you, they are extremely boring.
Oh, it's totally boring. Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing is 48 hours compressed into 48 minutes.
I know. I can't imagine. I would guess that sometimes that CBS people have to, like, scrounge around to find something to show because, like, for 35 minutes of what I was watching today, they were laying around sleeping. They weren't talking or anything. They were just laying around sleeping. Of course, yeah. I got some good information the other 20 minutes, but...
See, what I can't believe that you missed that last little bit on the show on Sunday.
I did. I totally missed that.
Last thing they showed, they had the night vision camera, and they had Erica in bed with Mike Boogie, and she said, give me a kiss. Or he said, give me a kiss. She gave him a kiss, and she says, night, Boogie. And then they turned around and went to sleep.
Now, see, and I told you when we were chatting earlier that I heard Will tell... Somebody, Will told somebody that Mike Boogie was finger fucking Erica in bed. And then you said, "Did he tell you to smell my finger?" I thought that was funny.
Oh my god, no, that's too much. But it's like, and see, she also said something like, well, they're going to find out that I'm just a little innocent, little small town girl from a town called Chill.
Yeah.
So, very see, good. That's the thing. That's the thing that worries me, is that that means that Danielle is, you know, might be in trouble if Erica and Chilltown are really allied. If that alliance is going to be stronger than the Legion of Doom alliance, you know.
Yeah, and if Erica feels at all emotional to Mike Boogie, then she would sell Danielle up the river in a heartbeat.
Which is so, it's like, you think that people would have learned, this is All-Stars, people. You think they would have learned about, like, getting emotional entanglements like that. Because it's such bullshit. I mean, it's, I guess what it really does prove is that, you know, we have this need for human companionship. And we get stuck in this very artificial situation like that for a time. They're just bound to, you know, attach to someone, whether or not it's a real, you know, true attachment, you know.
Well, that's true, but I think you also have to look at how many of those relationships survived after Big Brother.
Well, that's my point. That's what I'm saying, is that it just fills that need to sort of be coupled with someone, or to be, you know, to be with someone. And if you're in this artificial situation, you know, and I guess what it makes me think of is like high school. You know, your friends in high school tended to be situational friends, as opposed to true friends. You know, I mean, not to say that there's anything against those friendships, but, you know, we end up being friends with the people we are growing up simply because of proximity. You know, they live down the street or they're in school, you know, and that's the only reason that you would have been brought together, and you don't really have a lot else in common necessarily.
That's why
people say, oh, well, you know, they're disappointed that their relationships after high school or after college have shifted. And it's like, well, you shouldn't be too disappointed or too surprised.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, is that people get, you know, upset that after high school they don't keep in touch with anyone. Well, because you really didn't have anything to begin with. So.
Right. You were situational friends. Like, you were friends based in proximity, you know?
Exactly.
Which is nothing wrong with, you know, that's just how life goes, you know?
So you'd think these people, especially the All-Stars, would have learned this from their own season, or from at least watching others.
Okay, I'm going to be out for 48 days or however long it is, and I'm just going to, you know, they're going to be like a monk, you know, spend their time in the Jack Shack.
Yeah. I kept waiting for someone to go in that Jack Shack, and I didn't see anybody go in there.
Well, but let me tell you, though, it's like, you know, someone like Mike, he's going to be in there with someone like Erica. Of course he's going to, you know, go for that.
Yeah, that's true.
He's going to try to tap that.
Tap that ass. But I did get to see, I did get to see James laying out by the pool.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing him splash in the water and stuff. He is so hot. God, that man is so beautiful. Anyway.
Okay. So let's move on to other topics.
I was going
to
say, enough about
Big Brother.
Exactly. Do you have a topic? Because I have a couple I can ask you about.
Well, I brought this up on my last podcast, and it was sort of a riff on this conversation that Wanda got going on her show about the whole manly man thing, you know, the manliness and stuff.
Yeah.
Have you been following that at all?
Yes, and I read that post that you put on your blog, on your podcast blog.
Yeah, we should probably bring people up to speed on that. Let me just sort of pull up my blog here and.
Okay. Yeah, I'll let you give them.
Wanda had talked about, you know, her show was called Manly Men Love Torture, and she was basically giving a critique of this article by this guy named Johnny Diaz, and he was talking about what he's calling the menaissance, which is, you know, that now there's, in popular culture, it's okay again for men to be real men, you know, and sort of the anti-metrosexual movement, which I just think it's ridiculous. You know, I think that's an insane argument.
Yeah.
And he had said that the focus of the article was a tongue-in-cheek look at how pop culture is embracing the manly man again. And I said, you know, that I was sure he meant for it to be lighthearted, but what really disturbs me about it is that it reveals a lot about our society, you know, and that it's really, for me, it's an ominous sign that, that, you know, like, the media and the popular culture are feeling this need to sort of seize upon these images of masculinity, and to sort of scapegoat anyone that doesn't fall into this sort of
stereotype,
really broad, really boring category of what manliness is. And the sad part of it is that, for me, is that that kind of outward display of manliness to me, reveals a sort of inherent insecurity.
Exactly, insecurity.
Really, like the ultimate, like these guys who gotta, you know, spit and chew and guzzle beer and be all manly men, all that, and like really make a show of it. I mean, there are people who are just like that, and that's fine. That's who they are. But then the guys who have to sort of make a show.
Yeah, get in fights and show their testosterone. Yeah.
Or just, the whole, you know, that whole thing. That's drag. You know, that's a more drag than drag, even, because you're putting on this costume, you're putting on the idea of what you think is masculine and manly, to try to appear more, you know, because what it is that it reveals that you really feel like you're not man enough,
right,
underneath, you know,
and maybe you're insecure with your sexuality.
Yeah, and it's total compensation, exactly. So, like, and I think that. On the whole, the country has a really deep problem with this. Like, we don't really have a strong masculine identity in this country. And what's ironic is that we feel emasculated by lots of different forces, but what's really emasculated us is our inability to be in touch with who we are as men.
Very true,
To be in touch with our masculinity and our femininity, just to let it be. You know, we have let go of that, and then now we want to blame other forces for sort of emasculating us. Oh, these bitches, they take away our manhood. No, sorry, it's you not being a man that's taking away your manhood. You know, not stepping up, not taking personal responsibility, not just being who you should be.
Right, and not letting society dictate the way you should be.
You know? Right, right, exactly.
But now here's a question for you that kind of goes along with this. You know, in the 70s, when the early 70s, when the gay liberation movement began, and then in the mid to late 70s, gay men became very macho and very manly. They, you know, wore a lot of flannel. They grew a lot of facial hair, and they started working out. Well, then the trend changed, and it was back to like smooth guys, thin guys. It didn't work out there for a while. You know, do you think we're going to move back to this trend of gay men becoming?
Here's the thing. I think that all of it, whether straight or gay, it's all tied up into the same sort of screwed up psychology. I think that whether it's straight men or gay men that have to sort of do that whole macho thing,
right.
It's trying to compensate, you know. I mean, here we had, you know, in the 70s, we had this reaction among gay men because it was gay lib, so we had this reaction against sort of the image of the Nelly Queen,
right.
Which, you know, the simpering, limp-wristed queen that was always the image because it was closeted, because it was hidden, and the only ones who were visible were the ones who were so queeny that, you know, they just couldn't help but look it. So all the other gays said, "Oh, well, we don't want to be associated with that, so we're gonna butch it up."
Right.
And so that right there is a level of self-hatred. It's a level of insecurity that's showing that. You know, then later, okay, so it came back again, and now we got this whole metrosexual. And so what I'm saying is that whether it's straight men or gay men, if they're going to be having this image of macho-ness to prove something, then that's, you know, all they're proving is that they're insecure.
Right, that they have something else going on with them.
Right. I mean, come on. You know, the truth is, you know, the big stereotype that has to be blown away is that, well, of course, gay men are masculine. They're into guys.
Exactly.
You know, they're into that masculine look. Very few gay men are into the sort of you know, very sort of what might be called stereotypical kind of, you know, it's not as attractive. I mean, even those guys are attracted to the manly men.
Right.
You know?
But there is a segment of the population, of the gay population, that is attracted to the Nelly kind of gay man, I think.
Right.
I agree that it is probably a smaller
hey,
percentage.
There's some Nelly men that I find very attractive.
Uh-huh, okay.
But again, to sort of break it into, like rules is what I see as problematic, you know. When people have this need to sort of put into the categories, that's the area that I think is sort of interesting to look at, because, you know, for me, attractiveness can take on many different forms and can look in lots of different ways. And, you know, there are hot guys who are super Nelly, and they're hot because they're comfortable with who they are.
Right,
like,
that's true.
What makes them hot. You know, that's
true.
What makes them attractive. And so it's, you can have the butchest, toughest guy, and he's not hot in the least because he's exuding this insecurity about who he is, really,
right,
as a man.
Right.
So, You know, that's the part. And here's the thing that I wanted to tie it to that I didn't really articulate very well in the piece that I wrote.
Okay.
And this is a piece that a book that was written a couple years ago that came to mind. There was a guy named what's this guy's name? Let me find it. It's here. Dr. Stephen Duquette. He wrote a book called The Wimp Factor: Gender Gaps, Holy Wars, and the Politics of Anxious Masculinity. And this is a brief sort of rundown of the book. It looks at the sometimes debilitating effects on U.S. politics and foreign policy of a femophobic masculinity, one split off from all things feminine. The book may stir controversy for challenging conventional notions of masculinity, piercing hyper-masculine sacred cows, and disseminating a left-leaning analysis. A Publisher's Weekly review noted that this book does not preach to the converted, but its fresh and complex insights may reach a new generation of swing voters. And basically what they're talking about is that this hyper-masculinity, the Bush administration is the perfect clear example
of
this. You know, the Christian fundamentalist, right-wing administration, that it's created this landscape, this political landscape, in which more and more men are becoming conservative. In campaign battles, politicians feminize their opponents to establish macho credibility and call into question their opponent's manhood. In his speech at the Republican convention, Vice President Dick Cheney told delegates that Kerry talks about leading a more sensitive war on terror, as though Al-Qaeda will be impressed with our softer side. So, I mean, basically, the method there is to call into question the masculinity of anyone who is your enemy, and anyone who shows sensitivity or shows understanding in any way, those traits that are considered feminine and weak, you have to sort of put them down. I mean,
you know what this sounds like? Smear the queer when we went to school in elementary school.
Totally. Exactly. Smear no, that's exactly queer. What it is. That and what it is again, it's born out of an insecurity of one's own masculinity. When you see someone that is queenie and feminine and that scares you, the reason it scares you is because you're afraid of that part of yourself.
Yes.
And this is sort of writ large on a grand political scale, is that you've got a generation of men that is terrified, and to sort of add fuel to that argument is, look at who we're talking about. We're talking about George W. Bush. His father was called a wimp when he was president. So now he's reacting to that and say, well, I'm not going to be seen as a wimp. I'm going to be tough. And he's going around picking fights all over the world to prove what a manly man he is.
Exactly.
And, it's really, they've basically vilified any of these traits. They've vilified self-reflection. They've vilified compassion. They've vilified, as he puts it in the book, human interrelatedness.
Oh.
And what it is that he argues that it's actually sociopathic. That sort of pathology that is created is antisocial. I mean, obviously, just listing those things, it says, yeah, that's incredibly antisocial.
Right.
And so what it does is that it's increasingly dividing us, and it's making the world look at us like bullies, which we are. I mean,
I was going to say, which we certainly live up to that description.
It's the classic bully syndrome, you know. So now,
I was going to ask a question, if I could. The article that Wanda was talking about, the guy who wrote the article, you mentioned briefly there that you thought maybe he had written it in as satire. Do you think that's...
Well, he said, he wrote back on Wanda's comment section and said, oh, this is a tongue-in-cheek analysis of this sort of trend, you know, and I guess, you know, he really was thinking of it like that. Oh, like it's a trend, like oh, it's just, you know, advertising and fashion, like, oh, it was cool one week to be metrosexual, now it's cool to be butch. And again, that just sort of shows the part that really bothers me about that is that look who are writing the ads. Who writes ads in America? The fags. Okay?
Yeah, I was gonna say the gay men.
It's the creative gay men who are either at the source of these or who are the ones who are fulfilling the idea. You know, it may be like some executive decided to, oh, well, we need to have some campaign, and then it's the fag that writes the clever ad copy, right? Either way, this is, again, it's yet another form of continued self-hatred. You know, that it's gay men themselves that are going to be the ones at the forefront of perpetuating these images, these stereotypes. I mean, this guy, bless his soul, Johnny Diaz, I'm sure he didn't mean no harm, but here we have a classic example. here's a gay man who is sort of saying, oh, well, look, it's just cool to be butch now.
Which is not a good thing for the gay men to do. He should not do that, I don't think.
Well, I, either way, I just think it to not look beyond that and to say, look, individual people have individual characteristics. And to broadly throw people into categories is just not seeing them as individuals. It's dehumanizing them in a way.
Yeah.
And secondly, what it's doing is it's saying that it's just like fashion almost. like your masculinity is just fashion.
You can just wear it on your sleeve.
Right. And for me, you know, it's like, no. What it means to be a man is to be responsible, to have integrity, to do what you say and say what you do. That is the definition of being a man. And guess what? Women can have those too. And and you know what I mean? Like, so just as we as men need to be comfortable with those quote-unquote feminine characteristics, I think a strong, well-rounded woman will have those masculine characteristics.
Okay, but now here's a question about the women. And not that this is a straight thing, but remember when the metrosexual thing basically began, women were really kind of pleased because they were finding sensitive men to date or marry and so forth.
And for the first time, the guys they were dating were taking a bath.
Well, right, but there was also a trend there for sensitive men to be attractive to women, you know, that kind of thing. But now, yeah. are women going to feel that they need to be attracted to these manly men? Or are they still going to want a sensitive man who's going to want to listen to what they have to talk
here's
about?
Here's the thing. Women give such mixed signals, and it's terrible because they don't know what they want. I mean, half the time, you know, they say they want a nice guy, but who do the women really go after? They go
the
after
big
the bastards.
Macho guys, yeah.
They go after the bastards who treat them like shit and who treat other guys like shit, okay?
Yeah.
And they're attracted to that. And I think it's primeval. Like, I don't want to blame people and say, oh, it's cultural or this. There really is a primeval need there. I mean, obviously, when we were living in caves and trying to survive, the women had to go with the strongest, toughest guy.
Because he would produce a child who would also...
Right. And his sperm was going to be the toughest sperm in town.
Right.
That was going to give her babies and keep her, you know, keep her family going. And he would take care of her. The wimp guy wasn't going to do that. So there is a primeval connection there.
But the wimp guy would have saved for retirement and listened to her talk and stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Meanwhile, the saber-toothed tiger would have been like, rah, 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 eating them up, you know, and he would be like, oh, honey, oh, dear.
Yeah.
And the tough guy would have just beaten the shit out of the saber-toothed tiger, you know.
Well, so, now, did this guy see the response that you wrote on your blog, your thing?
I don't know. He hasn't responded. I haven't gone to Wanda's blog today, you know, to her website today to look at that, to see whether he responded. Let me find out. Hold
okay.
on a second.
That's fine.
While we talk, we can keep talking, fill in the blanks.
I was going to say, because I did have another topic for you, because we haven't talked about the whole ceasefire thing in the Middle East, and I was wanting to get your opinion on the whole
ceasefire. Did you look at the news today? Did you see whether it's held?
It has held. As of this, the evening news, it was holding. It was still holding.
Yeah.
So, but an interesting statistic I heard on the news was that at the beginning of the ceasefire, the casualties were extremely unbalanced. For example, only 169 people were killed in Israel, but 1,110 people were killed in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just... I just think that's extremely unbalanced. And how can anyone say that, well...
What's funny is that then as someone who supports Israel will say, oh, but what about the thousands of people who have been murdered by suicide bombers in the last 10 years?
Right, that's
true. You know, and they're going to they'll find any way to justify that. You know?
Well, and they also were saying that the guy, the head of Hezbollah, was claiming that it was victory, that they were able to hold their own to a ceasefire. So he was considering that it was victory for them. They had won. I'm like, no, dude, it's just nobody won. It's you're both.
No.
You're both having...
The truth is, nobody there wants peace. They don't want peace. They don't want it. They want to kill each other. They desperately, deep in their souls, want the other side to die.
Well, then we should just leave them alone and let them kill each other.
Well, but essentially, that's what's going on there. And they all have justifications for it, but really when it comes down to it, they simply hate. They hate. And they want But see, the problem with hate of that magnitude is that it's hate for humanity.
Yeah,
you know, because they don't love human life enough to stop doing what they're doing. And you know, we're big hypocrites too because we're doing the same damn thing. You know,
well, not in my name. Bush is doing it.
Unfortunately, it is in your name.
Well, that's in our country's name. Yeah,
it's in your name, and it's at your behest, even though you don't want it.
Exactly.
But it's being done in your name, and that's the disgusting part of it. You know,
that
there's a there really is very little respect for human life. You know, and we like to look and say, oh, the 20th century, you know, oh, and like look back as if it was history. The 20th century is still going on, because basically the 20th century was characterized by mass murder on a huge scale, just genocide, and it's still going on.
Yeah.
And we like to think, like, we like to look back and say, oh, well, World War II, that was horrible, and those Nazis and this and that. It's like, excuse me, you know, who are we to talk? We have not learned one damn thing.
I was just going to say that we have not learned anything from history.
Nope, not at all.
So, in thinking of that, then, do you think that this ceasefire will not hold?
Oh, it'll hold for a week or so until someone gets itchy. You know, some trigger finger gets itchy, or someone looks at someone the wrong way, or you know, someone yells a nasty comment across the border, and then it'll all start up again.
Yeah.
You know, but hopefully it'll last long enough for some, you know, aid to go in there and pull out some of the civilians who have been injured, you know, or displaced by it.
Right.
It's a big mess. It's horrible.
It is.
So, okay, just to get back to the other issue, I went over to Wanda and let's see. So Johnny Diaz didn't respond to what I wrote, but a person named Apollonius wrote, I don't know, Chef Mark. Frankly, I think saying most American men have issues with their sexuality on a personal and professional level is just as bad a stereotype. It's the type of belief that makes people defensive, and that's where the real seeds of hatred are not only sown, but where they grow like kudzu. I'm always wary of an analysis of a group based on their pop culture. Pop culture is really too flippant and voguey, and has its stakes set in being distractingly counterintuitive to previous trends. It's too much like trying to figure out the world's economy using trendy Asian penny stocks, looking at a tiny case study to figure out the world as it rests today. To me, it seems like America has been wanting for what it usually wants for, a sense of consensus and acceptable compromise, and the ability to go from day to day with this feeling that they don't need to personally intervene in the course of the country, or that they are a horrible person for thinking the thoughts they have. Mostly, I think people need to go ahead and get some shit done without worrying how their genital configuration dictates they do it, or wondering if there is a way they could be better avoiding the machinations of lurking terrorists. That's a really interesting point.
That is a really interesting point. However, I did hear just a bit in there, kind of what you were saying, that basically those people who are comfortable with the way they're feeling, they're not thinking about all that macho stuff like he was saying.
Well, I think what he's saying is that they don't want to think about it. They don't want to have to think about any of this crap, any of it.
Okay.
They want to just do their shit day to day and not have to worry about anything, which, of course, is checking out on a major scale. It's just totally checking out. It's saying,
it's either
checking
out, or they're not letting it bother them that other people have an issue with their masculinity.
Oh, I didn't hear that. I heard that. I mean, that would be great if that were the case, but I don't think that's the case overall in America.
Oh, no, I agree. I'm just saying,
I would love it if there were people who were doing that. I mean, that's a very individualistic approach, which, as you know, I always endorse. You know,
I
am an individualist above all, and I think that people need to take personal responsibility and just be themselves and not let other people's analysis of them, you know, bother them, which, I mean, ironically, I guess that's what this person's saying. He's telling me that, you know, my pop psych analysis is sort of lumping these people into broad categories, and I guess that's true.
Yeah,
but it's hard to live in this country and not notice that and not say, wait a minute, you know, there are these huge unquestioned assumptions about what it means to be a man, and I think a lot of these people who are playing this game just don't really get it. They don't get that what it really means to be a man is not any of that outward stuff. Whether you're super femme or super butch, it's drag on both sides. That, as I said, being a man is being responsible. It's taking care of the things that you need to take care of. It's doing what you say and saying what you do. That's all.
Yes, but it's those guys who aren't thinking that. They're not thinking that way because they were raised to believe that men should be manly men. You know, think about them. I would say the majority of the country, when they were being raised, it was, you know, beat up the guy who's bothering you, have a gun, get the girl, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I just think that because they were raised that way, it's a lot harder for them to break that mold.
It's interesting you say that, because now I'm thinking back to the way that I was raised. And, you know, my father was a very, very masculine guy. I mean, in that classical sense. But he wasn't like a, you know, spitting, you know, guzzling beer, sort of, you know, scratching balls kind of masculine guy. But he was a very, you know, he was a masculine man, you know, and or is, I should say. And he had been a drill sergeant in the Marine Corps.
Oh.
And his parenting style was very much the parenting style of a drill sergeant in the Marine Corps. You know, I was disciplined a lot as a child. I had to stand in the corner if I did something wrong, or I would do the push-ups and all that stuff, you know. And it was he never, ever verbalized or even, you know, expected this sort of idea that a real man, you know, does this, or, you know, dominates women, or shoots things, or kills animals. Like none of that was ever a part of my parenting from my dad. It was a huge emphasis on self-reliance and discipline and meeting your responsibilities, you know, even down to, like, you know, balancing the checkbook.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. I mean, I had lessons in balancing a checkbook.
Then I would say that you're one of the rare ones. And now here's a question for you. Were you raised, would you consider where you were raised urban, suburban, or rural?
It's strange because Albuquerque, we were living in the outskirts of Albuquerque, which was, at one time, it was rural. But what's funny about it is that it's sort of become suburban, but not in the sense of suburbia of the detractomes, you know, because we had,
right.
You know, it was there before Albuquerque was a metropolis, and Albuquerque just spread out into all of that area. You see what I mean? So
yeah.
it's a strange kind of suburban thing.
I would think that rural and certain parts of suburban areas, boys would be, you know, through television, through parents, through school, would get the idea that you need to be a manly man. Because I think I consider my upbringing in the suburban area, I'm a suburb of D.C., so I grew up in the suburbs, was very manly man. You do the sports, you know. Now, this is not coming from my father. My father was very good. That's why I had a good balance. But in school, in things you watched on TV, I think it was a very obvious, be a manly man, you know, drink, shoot guns, get the girl.
Right.
You know,
get lots of pussy.
Right. Yeah. That was the impression I got. And I knew that I was not that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know, anytime you get into this kind of discussion, it's any statement you make, of course, someone can counter and say, but you're making, you know, gross generalizations.
Jason's right.
And, you know, I'll say, truly, I am guilty of that. But by the same token, it is my experience. You know, I speak from my experience growing up in this culture. And
very true. And everyone, you know, possibly has their own experience.
Yeah.
You know.
But I mean, it's funny that, like, just to conclude what I was saying with my father, it's like, now, right now, I'm like, I'm even coming to a realization right now, like, wow, you know, I thought I had this sort of super tough upbringing, but really, in reality, I think it was a very responsible upbringing, you know, of training me to be a man without sort of loading me up with these false notions of, you know, the outward idea of masculinity, you know, and it's strange because, you know, my outlook on what it means to be a person is very much informed by that, and like, in terms of my philosophy, yeah, that's really it. It's like, you know, be a person of integrity, you
right.
know, live by your word, meet your responsibilities, you know, don't be afraid to express yourself. And these are all masculine traits, yet they take into account the role of the feminine in a well-rounded human being. You know, I guess, you know, it's a real Jungian kind of approach.
Yes, yes. But I'd say that your father did an awfully good job then. Look what you've just realized.
Yeah. You know? No, he's a great father. I really have a great father. I'm really very close with him. He's my best friend in a certain respect, you know, and he's always been incredibly accepting of me too, you know.
That's
like,
great.
He obviously didn't have the easiest time in the world when I came out, but I think he's just been amazing. He's been amazingly wonderful in that regard, you know. Never ever once ever a disparaging remark about it, you know.
That's great.
Yeah,
I think you and I are lucky in that respect.
Yeah, so I guess we really are lucky.
Yeah. All right, well, I got to end this show. It's been running a little long, but before I go, I want to let all the listeners know that you were one of the people who sent in a translation for Carlos's message that was in Spanish yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Did you get any other translations?
I did. First thing this morning, I mean, literally, as I woke up, I checked the email, and Narik in Spain sent me a message telling me what it said.
Okay.
So, and then I got your voicemail, or your My Chingo message, giving the translation.
I wasn't sure if I missed anything, because there was a little bit that was a little bit garbled, but I didn't hear everything he said.
Well, I'll tell you what Narik said. Narik said that the message says, "Hi, I'm Carlos from Nagana-ken, Japan.
Yeah.
I'm inviting you to listen Radio Studio Latino." And he gives me the website. "Congratulations on the website. It's great. From Nagano-ken, Japan. Enjoy this new week," or something
Okay,
like that.
Okay, so yeah, I didn't miss anything. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So, but I get that. I get that as like an advertisement for his, whatever. If it's a
for his radio show.
Radio station, his podcast, his whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't even know how he would find me, because I'm not Latino. I don't even speak Spanish.
No, but you're Asian, and we Latinos love Asians.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Oh, you totally cleared it all up for me. Well, anyway,
it must be.
Thanks for being my co-host tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And, you know, I need to be on your show sometime again.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be doing a Skype cast.
Oh, and, cool.
I'm going to be announcing it in the next day or so as to when exactly it's going to be. So if any of you listeners out there also like to listen to me get up on my soapbox.
We love it.
Then, you know, look at Remarkably Mark for the announcement of when the Skype cast is going to be, and we'll record a Skype cast.
Excellent. And if you let me know ahead of time, I will announce it on my show again, too.
Right on. Okay.
Great. Thanks so much. Say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, boys and girls, that's our show for today. Sorry it ran a little long, but we had a great discussion about manly men. So, boys and girls, until next time, bye. Usher Ray.